Welcome to the Awaken Therapist podcast, where we explore a holistic and transpersonal approach to psychotherapy. In season four, you'll hear live therapy demos, case consultations, and dynamic teachings designed to awaken transformation in yourself, your clients, and the world. I'm your host, Harmony Quiker. As a psychotherapist, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, I created this podcast to empower you to deepen your presence, expand your awareness, and trust the sacred unfolding that happens in authentic therapeutic contact. To learn more about our trainings, community, and resources, check us out at awakentherapist.com. Through the lens of attachment theory, one of the most common relational dynamics is between a person who is anxiously attached and one who is avoidantly attached. Although many couples are familiar with this pattern, it can feel surprisingly elusive when it comes to actually transforming it. In this episode, I'm joined by my husband, Christopher Arnold, to talk about what that dynamic has looked like in our relationship and how we've worked with it over time. I tend towards anxious attachment and he tends towards avoidant, and like many couples, that created a push-pull between us. What we found is that the issue wasn't that one of us wanted too much or that the other one wanted too little. It's that both of our systems were trying to find safety just in very different ways. And the shift that we created didn't come from changing one another. It came from learning how to stay connected to ourselves in moments of activation and then reaching toward each other from that place. I hope that you enjoy this very personal conversation. So I've been wanting to do an episode for quite some time on attachment repair, specifically in the context of relationship. And as I was sort of mulling over how I was going to bring this into this space, I thought to ask you to join me in this conversation. So thank you, Christopher, for being here with me.
My pleasure. Love you.
I love you. Yeah, it's really meaningful to me to have you here talking about this for many reasons. And one is I really want people to understand that our attachment wounds are adaptive strategies that we create to survive the environment that we grew up in. And they're not pathological. They're actually like a deep wisdom of our nervous system. And when they arise in the context of relationship, it can feel quite surprising because we love each other. We want deep connection, and yet there's these wounds that can often get in the way of creating the loving relationship that we really want to cultivate. And in my life, I was telling you earlier that people often ask me if I was raised with a secure attachment style, and the answer is no. I see my attachment style as anxious ambivalent, which is really wanting closeness, but then feeling ambivalent or unsure about that closeness when I have it. And so then sort of wanting to retreat from that or sort of test the security of that closeness. And I was surprised that that came up in my relationship with you because I thought I was so ready. I thought I was so ready to have a secure relationship, but then there you were. And the closer we got, the more ambivalent I would feel.
I think that's interesting because I think we were ready, but that doesn't mean that there's no work to do.
Wise words. So true. Yeah, so true. And for me, ready, actually, I really did think ready meant that I would do it perfectly and that I would never get triggered because I thought I had developed a secure enough relationship within myself to be able to withstand sort of the waves of relationship. How did you perceive yourself as you were getting ready to find me and to create our relationship?
Yeah, I don't think I was as assured about my own readiness, but certainly I was ready for something different. I was ready for partnership. I was ready for something more balanced and equal.
And how would you describe your attachment style before we met and how it sort of developed in your life?
Yeah, I think you'll have to give it a name because I'm not sure what name to give it. But I can say that I grew up in a household, the oldest of three siblings and, two younger sisters. My dad was very emotionally distant, so I don't think I ever had much of a relationship with my dad and still really don't. My dad was also very volatile, so he was not a safe space or a safe person to connect with. So I was much more connected with mom. And I got a lot of reward or recognition for helping mom, and taking care of my sisters was part of helping mom. And then I would say the other piece growing up for us, that the three of us heard a lot of no. So anything that we would ask for or wanted, we would often hear no. And I had told you this story before where I'd said, "Oh, I want to learn how to play the guitar." And my mom said, "Oh no, you won't stick with it and it'll just be a waste of money." And so from those sorts of interactions, I learned to keep my wants and needs to myself and become needless, wantless. And then the other piece I'll say is it was really encouraged to start working early, make my own money. So I became very, very independent at a very young age, didn't want very much of anything from anybody, didn't ask for anything, and got attention and love, I guess, from helping.
Yeah, what you described there of around being really independent and not reaching out to ask for anything is very characteristic of an avoidant attachment system. And in an avoidant attachment system, it is really just that I'm going to take care of myself, you take care of yourself. And when somebody with an anxious attachment system finds their way into a relationship with somebody with an avoidant attachment system, it's often called the pursuer-distancer dynamic, where the person with the anxious attachment system wants to be as close as possible and has a hard time regulating their nervous system on their own, like really needs the presence of another to regulate, which is actually really activating to the person with the avoidant attachment system because they want more independence and distance and to take care of their emotional needs on their own. More recently, this dynamic is called the island and the wave. But while I'm talking about it, I just want to say that there are four attachment styles, one secure and three insecure. And when we're learning how to create a secure attachment within ourselves, looking at the character traits of a secure attachment really informs how we can do that. And so some of the traits of a secure attachment are knowing that if we reach out and ask for something, that we're going to be okay if the person doesn't meet our needs, and we trust that if they can, they'll be responsive. And that's a real primary trait of a secure attachment. Another one is having a general positive viewpoint on relationships in general, a higher sense of self-esteem, knowing that our needs matter, that what we want matters, and the reciprocity of relationship is trusted. So those are all traits of a secure attachment. And the other three I've sort of already named, but insecure. An insecure attachment style is often called anxious preoccupied. But as I shared, I relate to my attachment system as anxious ambivalent, which is actually what it was originally called when attachment theory was first being developed. And in that, an anxious attachment system develops in an environment with a lot of inconsistency. So sometimes our needs are met and we know we matter, and sometimes they don't. Our needs aren't met and we don't think we matter. And we end up feeling really insecure in relationship within that inconsistency. And that's why that like desire for closeness is so strong. And then avoidant. And sometimes it's called avoidant dismissive, where somebody with an avoidant dismissive attachment system can be really defensive, trying to keep other people's opinions out, not wanting to be influenced by other people's opinions. The avoidant attachment system develops in an environment where there's a lot of coldness and distance. And as you were describing, a belief that what you need doesn't matter. You just have to take care of yourself in that. And then the last insecure attachment style is disorganized, which really emerges in a environment characterized by trauma. So it can look like complex trauma. And a person with a disorganized attachment system at some times can seem very secure, at other times can seem very anxious, other times seem very avoidant. And it can be very confusing to be in relationship with somebody with a disorganized attachment system.
Yeah, I hear you say that I'm avoidant. I think what doesn't totally make sense to me is I can see the avoidance, but I can also see that I listened a lot. I wanted at least physical closeness. I've always found attachment categories to be a bit confusing.
That's a great point. And when somebody has an avoidant attachment system, it actually doesn't mean that they don't want relationship or that they don't want to listen to another person. What it means is that when they are in their attachment wound, they organize towards that independence and turning away from their emotional pain. So they're avoiding themselves, they're avoiding the relationship. And because the way that you described with your mom and your sisters, I think to many, you probably seemed very secure. I know you did to me when I met you. Similar to me, I imagine when we first met, there's a lot of development that happened also to create that level of security. But when we first got together, I was really surprised at the next level of attachment wound within me that I touched, that I really thought that I had already met and transformed. And I think that's in part because of the persistent goodness that you have, the heart that you bring to relationship, that when I would see those avoidance strategies, I was surprised by them.
Your metaphor of the island and the wave really resonates. Early in our relationship, you often referred to me as an island. And at first, I didn't know what that meant. But yeah, I was very independent and I didn't need anything from anyone and didn't ask anything from anyone. And in a lot of the relationships that I had leading up to ours, yes, I was with people who expressed many needs. And the dynamic was, I won't ask for anything. I don't need anything. I'll give you just about anything you ask for within reason, and then you won't leave me. And as long as we keep that dynamic, then everything's great. But to your point, the wave or the anxious attachment style could feel my distance and the wall that I had. And that was activating to their attachment system. And so then they would get emotional, upset, and it often felt like they were blaming me for something, which then I would retreat and build a bigger wall and have a further island because I didn't feel like I had done anything wrong.
Before I met you, I showed up in relationship in a similar way that you described, with prioritizing everybody else, taking care of everybody else's needs, and really believing that my needs didn't matter and thinking that that was going to earn me love. It really set me up to endure a lot of harm from the people that I was with, a lot of criticism and emotional volatility. And I was sort of the shock absorber of all of that. I had a lot of capacity and a lot of empathy for other people's suffering at the cost of myself. And leading up to the time that we had met, I had done a tremendous amount of work on myself in that regard, really understanding that my survival strategy isn't who I am. And this is actually something that I see a lot in my work with clients, that people end up becoming identified with their attachment wound, meaning that they believe that that's who they are. And so deep in my attachment wound, I believed I was unlovable, and my identity, my personality traits really emerged from that wound. And so recognizing that that's not who I actually am, that's just part of my humanity that I get to love and heal, was really important for me. It was very hard work, very hard work. And leading up to the time that I met you, I was starting to orient to a new type of man, really understanding that love isn't painful and that relationship is a resource. and I was only going to be in a relationship with somebody who I felt was a resource in my life and not a drain. As you know, the moment I saw your picture on the dating app, I knew you were my beloved. And I was just reinforced so deeply the moment I met you and every moment since.
Yeah, referring back to how we began about being ready, I think what I remember now is I was ready to take ownership for some things that I wanted and needed. And if you remember, I thought that what I really wanted was family and that I wanted someone that I could have children with. And so the first time you reached out, I didn't respond because I made up a story that you weren't interested in family because you already had children of your own. And so, in a way, I was trying to take a stand for what it was that I wanted from the very beginning. But then when we connected a second time, then I responded and decided that I should find out if what, rather than deciding for you what whether you wanted something or not.
When we first got together, how do you remember our dynamic of when our wounds would meet each other?
I think that some of the same patterns played out. It's just they were playing out with you, someone who had much more capacity to be able to talk about what was going on or name what was going on. So I was still trying to please you. I was still worried that I would disappoint you. I mean, I put you on a pedestal, which I often did with my partners. And so I was trying to earn your love.
The thing that I remember when we first got together was you like to do things for me. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that that's the way you show love, by doing things for me. And I didn't feel loved by that because I wanted your attention, I wanted your presence and you to cherish me. And it was early on in our relationship, and you were doing all these tasks in the house, and I desperately wanted you to just stop and look at me, and I couldn't find the words to say that. And so I started working with my own attachment system, and I just held my inner young one, and I told her that I would always give her attention and that she'd always be important to me, that I wouldn't drop her, because a primary part of my wound is this head trauma I had as an infant, where I had a near-death experience. And so for me, when you weren't giving me attention, I felt like I was gonna die. Like it was earth-shattering to me. And because that wound is so pre-verbal, it was really hard for me to articulate. And as I said earlier, a few moments ago, I had never really touched that wound in my previous relationships because I didn't feel safe enough to. And there you were, just doing stuff in the house. And I actually remember I asked you to come outside with me and we went to the front yard. And I said to you, I know you're not the one that caused this wound, but it's really here right now with us. And I need your attention right now. And because I was speaking on behalf of my wound and not from it, you were able to hear me and be really responsive to me. Now, I'll say that wasn't always the case. Sometimes I could do that and sometimes I couldn't, but at this particular moment, I could, and you could really hear me. And because you were responsive and so caring, it really helped to rewire that experience in my nervous system.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at us now and think that we've had a great relationship all along, but the early days and really the first few years were a little volatile at times, and we both could raise our voices and disappear in our own ways, and so yes, but I think you were able to recognize some things and bring language to what was happening in a way that I could make sense out of. And that helped us start to move past the volatility.
Yeah, and this piece, I just want to highlight it again because I think it's so important for people who are trying to expand their capacity beyond their wounds and find a new way, that it's not about having the wound not be there. It's really about recognizing that that's not who you really are, and finding a way to speak on behalf of your experience rather than from it. So, for example, moments where I was identified with my wound and speaking from it, I might say to you, "You don't care." That's something that actually really surprised me when it would come out of my mouth. And it was so clearly my inner young one once I could really hear myself there. But that's me speaking from my wound, as opposed to being able to speak on behalf of my wound, which is, I might say, I'm feeling lonely or angry or scared, and I really want you to hold me. And when we speak on behalf of our wound, there's just more spaciousness and less blame. And it's a really important capacity to build.
Yeah, and then I think you even gave me a few phrases and things that I could say, and I think you invited me to say them to your young one, not just to you. And so in that way, I think we were able to acknowledge and recognize that this pattern isn't you, but it's a part of you.
One of those phrases I remember I asked you to say when you were going away on a business trip, and I think it was your first business trip you took when we were living together. And again, I was so surprised at how anxious I was. And so I just said, "I notice I'm feeling anxious and I don't know why." And you actually said, "Maybe it's because I'm going away on this trip." And so I asked you to hold me and tell me that you're going away, but you're not leaving me. And you held me so tight and you just repeated it. "I'm going away, but I'm not leaving you. I'm just going to go work for a while and I'm going to come back." And you would really reassure me in that, and my nervous system would really calm down. And over time, because we continued that every time you went on a trip, and now you're going on a trip tomorrow, and I feel less anxious. Another one was when I would ask you to connect with your heart, or remember that you love me when you were feeling angry. And also because I really wanted to hear you is why I asked that. Because I knew if I could feel your heart, I'd be able to hear you more. And that seemed really, really effective.
Yeah, because a big trigger for me was when I w didn't feel heard. And that would send it, what my young one would say is, if you're not going to hear me, then I might as well just go be alone on my island. And I would retreat and disappear for days and just be with my young one. But as you mentioned, I wasn't at a place where I could recognize my young one or take care of my young one or nurture my young one, give my young one what they needed. I would just more go away, and I didn't know how to do those things.
Do you remember when there was a shift for you?
Nothing comes to mind. I think maybe sometimes I'm still working on that.
I feel a lot of tenderness when I hear that. What do you notice as you share that?
Well, I think what comes up for me is I think where I am now is. I can come back because I care about our relationship and I'm committed to our relationship. And so maybe I'm still not taking the best care of my young one, but I am willing to show up for our relationship.
Yeah, and what you just said there, I think points to, for me anyways, where I really started feeling the shift in our relationship was when we were both committed to the love that's here. And early in the relationship, we were fighting against each other. And then something shifted, and when we would get activated, it became we're fighting for each other, like for love. And one sort of indicator of a relationship healing, similar to a nervous system healing, is the amount of time it takes to reconnect after having moments of disconnection. So, in neurobiology, we understand that nervous system regulation is not about making an experience go away, it's about learning how to stay connected to yourselves in moments of dysregulation. And resilience is measured by the amount of time it takes to return to yourself after you've left in moments of dysregulation. And so, let's say you are activated and it takes you 4 hours to find your way back to yourself. The moment you come back, you're building your resilience. And over time, it'll take you less time to come back to yourself. And it's similar in healing the attachment system because the attachment system is so intertwined with the nervous system, specifically the vagus nerve. And so early in our relationship, I think sometimes it would take us 3+ days to find our way back to each other. And now a similar sort of spark of an argument can happen, and it could take us 10 minutes to find our way back to love and connection.
Well, I also think that we can start to see when the other is leaving themselves. And I think that that can be a signal to not necessarily just continue plowing forward on the path that we're on.
So I'm going to read a list of some things that I've jotted down that I remember as being really helpful for us in learning each other and learning how to be with each other in a way that felt loving and in alignment with how we want to be in the world and with one another. The first one is therapy. And we didn't go to therapy a lot, and we didn't have the greatest experiences in therapy. But early on, like when we first got together, when we went to therapy, I was able to see your rescuer. You had this impulse to rescue women. And I don't think that I would have been able to see that had we not gone to therapy, because I didn't feel like I needed rescuing. And so it didn't quite register for me. But that was a really important moment for me in understanding you. Is there anything you remember about therapy?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to find a therapist that we could work with, but I do remember one moment where you embodied your young one and you, I think, laid your head on my lap and I caressed your hair or something and was just holding your young one. And I think that that created a breakthrough, a small breakthrough for us. I remember that you could see that I could be a safe place for your young one.
Yeah. Another thing that I think really helped us is being able, as you said already, but being able to name what was happening in real time. Like, as opposed to getting caught up in the story of it all, just naming what was happening could bring us back to connection. And just having language around our own experience and activation.
That's been a dynamic in our relationship is that we're both learners and we both have wanted to learn. And I've learned a lot from you. But yeah, the one in particular is that you have an interest in the Enneagram. I've become interested in the Enneagram. And that language has helped us identify more about what might be going on for us.
The awareness is so helpful when it isn't charged with shame and blame, which can easily happen in relationships when somebody is in hyper arousal and in their fight response. And so being able to see clearly with awareness without shaming somebody is extremely important. Here, it's kind of a little funny, I think. We both are the same Enneatype. And so we know each other's patterns like they're our own in many ways. In many ways, we're very similar, even though in other ways, we're also extremely different. But as Enneatypes, we both have a tendency to want to take care of other people's needs, and we have a lot of capacity to do that. And I actually remember one time in particular, I had just made a batch of cookies and we were sitting on the couch and you were like, "I'm going to get another cookie." And I was like, "Oh, let me get it for you." And we were like, "No." And I was like, "Come on, let me get you a cookie." And we're having this sort of little teeny argument around who's going to do what for whom. So that's one way the Enneatype can look, but Enneatype stress to the eight. And so when we argue, it is, "I'm done and I'm out." And it can be a big abrupt sever, to the relationship that can be hard to come back from.
And there can be a lot of shouting and fireworks before the break, like that. Yes.
Yeah, challenging perception and yeah, just a lot of anger can come up there. One other thing that I'll say about the Enneagram is that it's such a useful tool in understanding your way out of your personality or your hyper-identified self. So understanding the way that you move in the world through the Enneagram can really help you to find new movements. to find new ways to be that are actually more true to your true self, as opposed to the survival strategies that you created in childhood. For that reason, having somebody be able to reflect that you're in that movement of your type can be really helpful.
Yeah, I think without going too much into the Enneagram, the great thing about relationship is that the way you behave in those moments of stress can be more helpful in identifying your Enneagram type than the way you are in day-to-day or normal life, right? So your stress patterns can be a very useful way for identifying what Enneagram type you are.
Another tool that I think helped us a lot was authentic relating. Early in our relationship, I brought you to an authentic relating workshop. It was something that we practiced on our first date together. In moments of conflict, it could be sort of weaponized sometime, like if somebody isn't owning their experience and it can just kind of fuel the argument earlier on in our relationship. But in its purest form, when we're both connected to our hearts, it can be so connecting and so beautiful.
Yeah, the danger with being an expert in anything is that you can kind of become the language police or the expert police about you're doing it wrong, I'm doing it right, and that misses the whole point. And so, yes, that is a useful tool that has served us well.
The thing that I love about authentic relating is that it really points to the lived experience of embodying Gestalt principles. And so, as a Gestalt therapist, what I've recognized over the years is that the skill of being in relationship is not the same skill of being a therapist. And that's humbling. And so, the skills of authentic relating really taught me how to be in relationship as opposed to be the expert. You know, as we were getting ready to do this, you mentioned that I can see everything and that I can point out all of your patterns, you know, from my therapist mind, which isn't connecting and it isn't really helpful for the relationship itself. It could be helpful for my own empathy and care for you, which I do use it in that way often, whether I name it or not. But authentic relating essentially teaches us how to own our experience as our own. And I think that in relationship, this can be a really murky place because I'm feeling something in relationship with you, meaning I've been impacted by you. So the idea of that I'm feeling this because of you creates this very murky experience, as opposed to just owning that this is how I feel right now. One thing I like to say to clients is when I'm working with couples, is that if this person said this to anybody else, would they have that same exact impact? And the answer is usually no, because when we're looking to somebody as our primary attachment figure, as we are with one another, we have a different experience than when we're not attached to somebody. And so it's just this indicator that you actually didn't make me feel this way. This feeling arose in me in relationship with you. And so learning to own that keeps the relationship clean and clear, where we don't get into those entanglement patterns as quickly. That actually gets to another point of authentic relating, which is sharing impact, letting somebody know how you feel when you hear what they've shared. And that's really a moment of connection. One thing that I've learned from authentic relating and from couples work as a therapist is that we don't need our barrier and our wounds and our pains to go away to be in connection. When we're in that authentic practice of owning our experience and sharing impact, we can actually stay in connection even when defenses are up. And that is actually regulating in and of itself. It can help to create a new experience within.
Yeah, that was a big thing. That was a big learning for me from authentic relating and working with you is that by living on the island, by living behind the wall, I wasn't sharing any of myself. And so I'd lost a lot of awareness of what was going on inside of me. So a lot of what I needed to work on was becoming more aware of what was happening and then giving language to that and realizing that that created emotional intimacy. that this was a safe relationship for me to bring emotional intimacy.
Yeah, and that leads to another practice that I think is really helpful, and that's just naming our needs directly. Like, I need to know you hear me, or I need you to hold me and say this thing, and to trust that by asking the other person for that, that if they are capable and resourced enough, they will. And if they don't want to, they'll say no, and that they have sovereign choice in that. And that's not actually so much the point. The point is that we ask, and that is essential in building a secure relationship. I remember when we first met, I would ask you what you need or what you want all the time, and you just did not know. And now you do more. You really do.
And I think there's this belief that people have in relationships that if I ask you to give me something and then you give it to me, then it doesn't count or it's not as true. I think that belief gets in the way so much because often our partners do want to give us the thing that we need. They just don't know what it is and they don't know how to give it. And so you're teaching them a bit. So I do think that's an important element of finding health in relationship.
And what you're pointing to there is the attachment wound itself. The young one didn't want to have to ask. They just wanted the caregiver to be attuned and responsive without their needing to ask. But now, in a mature, wise relationship, asking and being responsive is part of the skill of relationship to learn.
And realizing that if your partner can't give that to you or doesn't do it quite right, also taking ownership and being able to give it to yourself, it prevents your partner from becoming your only source of getting that need met, which can take some of the pressure off.
Absolutely. I like to think of attachment repair as first beginning within and then extending out into the relationship. A sentence stem that I came up with early in our relationship for myself was, when I feel blank, my inner young one needs blank from me. So that was my way of cueing myself to give myself what it was that I needed. And from that place, I would then ask you to come join me in that. But I would start by giving it to myself. Yeah, when my inner young one feels lonely, she needs attention from me. And I would just close my eyes and give her attention. And I find it really interesting because when I'm able to do that first and then come to you and ask for something, it has a different quality than when I'm in the wound and just trying to get all of my need met from you. There's more space and choice around it, less contraction.
I'm having a memory. I'm remembering that when it would take us a while to come back together, and then we would come back and we would work through things. And I think we would both often end up in tears and we would feel closer and we would remind each other that we really do love each other and we want the same thing. But I remember a phrase we would say to each other, "Let's never do that again." And we laugh about that because we did it again. But I think it reminded us that we wanted the same thing. We didn't want to fight. We wanted to be loving towards each other. And I think it encouraged us to work towards that.
When I hear you say that, I start thinking about how we actually created repair after rupture. Was there anything in particular that we did to really repair after we had a conflict?
We both have a value of only saying something if we really believe it or if it's really true. And so at times, you'll ask me or I'll ask you for something, and we don't want to say that exact thing because it doesn't resonate as entirely true. In a way, I think that that actually builds trust because we know that the other person isn't saying something just to say it. They're saying something that is true and meaningful to them. And if we're not willing to quite say what the other person wants, then there's some friction there that needs to be resolved. And I think it pointed the way to deeper levels of understanding or some things that we needed to talk through or understand at a deeper level.
So a couple more like structured practices or systems of work that we used, I think, on our journey. One is breath work, which, as you know, is so important to me. I was raised by a breath worker and I've been doing breath work my whole life. I know it's not your favorite, but I do think that breathing together at the same workshops or at the same time created a new balance between our nervous systems.
I think your list is moving into some more of the embodied practices. And I think getting to know myself and know my wants and know my needs meant getting more embodied. And so, whether I like to practice or not is kind of irrelevant. I think we've tried a lot of different things to help me get more embodied and be more in myself.
As you say that, that reminds me of one that's not on my list, and that was nonlinear movement method. I remember we did breath work one day, and the next day you did a nonlinear movement method practice, and you were so regulated. I remember you saying to me something to the effect of, "I'm sorry, I'm not more energetic," or something like that. And it surprised me because I felt so connected to you in that moment. Like you were so present with me for maybe the first time.
Yeah, I think I apologized for not being a certain way a lot early in our relationship and kept believing that I needed to show up and be something in order to be lovable or welcome. You taking the time to reiterate that you felt more connected to me in those moments, it didn't fully compute early on. But again, I think it's that the wall was coming down, I wasn't showing up with a performative mask, and that was more connecting, and you felt more connected, in those moments.
Yeah, another practice that I love so much is cuddle co-regulation. And for me, this was actually where I had one of the most profound shifts in my attachment system with you. I remember it was during COVID, so it was just a very stressful time. And we were actually up in Steamboat with the family, and we're doing this practice up there, just the two of us, while the kids were in the other room. In this practice, there's a receiver and a giver, and that's like explicit before we start. And I remember when I was the receiver, I just wanted you to hold me as tight as you possibly could. Like you were like, I am, and I'm like, tighter. Like I wanted to feel you. And I realized in that moment that I wasn't letting you in. Like you were right there, but I wasn't receiving you into my attachment system. And so I just started drinking in your presence into my attachment system. And something fundamentally shifted for me in that. Like you are here. You know, as I say it now, I don't like, I want to find the words to describe how profound it was for me because I don't think until that moment I realized that I had such a barrier to nourishment and to love. And I felt safe enough in that moment to really let you in.
That's a beautiful moment I didn't know about, so thank you for sharing.
In that same practice, you might not remember, but there was also a moment where I was the giver and you were the receiver. And it was similar where we're in this cuddle position and the giver in this practice attunes to the receiver, and that's really the setup. And so our eyes are closed, and I'm like sensing into you. And again, I'm energetically trying to get as close to you as I can because we're cuddling and that's what we're doing. And all of a sudden, I just could sense, and you were behind me, and I was sensing it with my inner eye that you were tense and you weren't breathing. And so without moving my body at all, I energetically gave you space and moved away from you. And I could feel your whole body relax and you took a deep breath. And again, something fundamentally shifted for me in relationship to my understanding of you and what closeness really means. Because they were two extremes and we were like finding our way to that midline that works for us. So for me, it was one of the favorite practices of mine that we've done.
I am starting to think ahead to, I think, the next item on your list, which are some of the more tantric practices.
Yeah, so one of the first sacred sexuality workshops we went to is called Kudoshka, which is based on indigenous teachings and is very ceremonial and a little wild. And I would say our experiences there were sort of moderate, like not like full breakthrough for me anyways. It wasn't until we went to a tantra workshop here in town that, wow, I actually think now that I'm saying it out loud, I think that that was where I had my biggest breakthrough in our relationship, was at the tantra workshop.
Yeah, say more.
How much can I say, Christopher? So in this particular teaching of tantra, they teach the sacred spot massage, which is something I had never heard of before. And I'd been studying Tantra for a long time, and at all the workshops I'd been at, it hadn't been taught. And essentially, the teaching comes from the idea that the only energy center chakra within the human body that we can touch from the inside, the middle of, is within the woman. And the practice itself is a massage. And the instruction that I was given as the receiver was everything that I feel is mine and to just keep breathing through it. And this is where I moved through my frustration, my annoyance, my impatience to find complete and utter joy and bliss and openness. It was really profound for me.
That's beautiful.
Another part of the practice that I think is so beautiful is that sexuality is treated as a ceremony. For me, I don't know if you know this, but maybe you do. For me, anytime that we are going to come together, I start with a meditation and a prayer and a devotional practice for us, because I really want our relationship all the way around to have us feel more connected to ourselves, more connected to divinity, and have spirituality at the center. In my opinion, that takes consistency in practice. It's not just a desire I have and then hope it works out. Every single day, I commit to having that be my intention for us.
I think the role that I play is also in like the setup of our space and in making space and creating a special space for us to be intimate. And that brings that. And I think we learned that from that ceremonial aspect. You're always good at the prayer and the intention setting, and I'm always good at the doing and the constructing and the building. And so those are the pieces that we bring to create something together.
It's so beautiful. I'm so glad you said that. You really do such a beautiful job of creating such a luxurious nest with everything that we could possibly need. It's so beautiful. Thank you for doing that for us.
And thank you for your beautiful prayers.
My heart feels all warm and gooey over here. How are you doing?
I'm loving you and wanting to give you a big hug.
So those feel like all the main practices to me. Something that feels important is that, same with work as a gestalt therapist, as a transpersonal counselor, same with authentic relating, I think healing the attachment system isn't about changing anybody. It's about becoming more of who you truly are as a person for yourself, and continuing to meet each moment with your partner as they are. And to me, that's the path of love. Being devoted to love as a path. Because the moment we try to change somebody else, it's actually, in my viewpoint and the way I teach therapy, it's an act of violence where we're violating somebody's sovereignty by trying to make them different. And this is about standing solid in who we are and meeting as two whole individuals.
I think what you're saying is really important, and I'm going to bring it into maybe a dynamic that you and I don't have, but that I think a lot of people do experience in relationships, which is you and I are willing to grow together. But what do you think would happen if one of us was stuck and not willing to participate, not willing to grow? What do you tell people then?
Well, I say it's not about whether you stay or go, it's about who you become. And so, as you continue to do your work of development and transformation and evolution, who you become might be somebody who doesn't want to stay in this relationship. Or if you continue to do that work, who you become might be somebody who can navigate this relationship in a loving way that is transmuting what's here. And there's no way to really know that except for to arrive at that moment. I really do think that people focus more on should I stay or should I go from this relationship, as opposed to who am I, who do I want to be here. So I've touched on this in a few different ways, especially with co-regulation and earlier on when I was talking about attachment theory. But the attachment system wants to be met in the degree that it wants closeness or space. And this is really important to recognize for yourself as well as in relationship. For an anxious, insecure attachment style, wanting closeness to me means wanting myself and being as close to myself as I want somebody else to be. Like that's where I really reclaim my attachment system. And feeling that closeness from you, like in the cuddle co-regulation, or when I have you say to me, I'm right here and I love you, and I can really feel your presence. That closeness is actually really reparative to my attachment system. Similarly, for somebody with an avoidant attachment system, as we were saying before, they need distance, but that doesn't mean they don't want connection. Just the type of connection that feels safe to them has more space around it, isn't quite so enmeshed. And so, really understanding that map of one another is so helpful, again, for yourself and for others.
Yeah, when I think about what you were saying around closeness and space, I think what has been reparative to my attachment system is when you give me the space to just be who I am, to show up authentically and not need to put on a mask. I think part of me retreating to the island is it's a place where I can let the mask down. And so having space where I can do that in relationship then makes it less important for me to disappear to do that.
Secure relationships, secure attachment is something that's co-created. And, as you were saying before, if you're with somebody who isn't invested in co-creating this with you, that's something that you get to decide if you want to keep showing up for or not. But when two or more people come together with the intention to create secure relationship, it can be messy, like we've shared, and that's why I wanted to have this conversation with you. It's not linear. It's not like now I have this skill, and so now I'm going to do this thing all the time. And so it takes a lot of grace, humility, persistence, commitment to showing up and trying again. This is really about how we feel safe and how we trust one another and how we're building that safety and building that trust together. And that's why it's something that can't be rushed. It's a foundation that we build for the relationship itself. And I really do think that the closer we get to this type of intimacy, the more our wounds show up so that we can transform them. Out in the world, at the grocery store, or with our friends, our wounds aren't the predominant thing that we're feeling. But the closer we get to intimacy, the more vulnerability that we feel, the more these wounds arise. And I honestly think that that's a gift. And I feel so grateful that I've been able to work on these aspects of myself with you.
Yeah, and likewise, I appreciate all the awareness and intention that you've brought into my life. I'm a much better person, much better version of myself because of you.
I'm just wondering if there's anything that you would say to somebody with an avoidant attachment system about repairing their attachment wounds.
I'm going to reiterate something you said. Your avoidance makes sense. Given how you grew up, your needs and wants are important. And when you go away on your island, take the time to be with yourself to understand what it is that you're wanting and needing. And the more that you can do that and bring that back to the relationship, the better off that will be.
Beautiful, thank you. I'll close by saying again this sentence stem that I think is so helpful. It's helped me so much. And that is, when I feel blank, my inner young one needs blank from me. And this can go towards any emotion or experience that you have. And it really is a reminder and an indicator of how to stay connected to yourself when you feel dysregulated, how to reparent yourself, give yourself the thing that you've always needed, to be loving with yourself. And then, we are biologically wired for connection. And so it's not wrong that we want our partner to be able to do something for us also in that. And so once you reconnect with yourself, then bring it into your relationship and ask for what it is that you need. The more connected you are to yourself when you ask for what you need, the impact is different on the environment. So thank you, Christopher.
Thank you, Harmony.
If you found this episode meaningful and want to deepen into the practices of transpersonal counseling, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com. We have live, online, and go-at-your-own-pace offerings that are designed to empower you to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Thank you for continuing to learn the art of creating a truly sacred healing space for your clients.